another fine day at Camp Dynasty. I am Counselor Austin, joined by Counselor Colin. And it's April 1st, which means the draft happens this month, Colin.
No April Fool's joke.
That's a real
it's
thing.
It's the month of the draft. We've made it, and that means that it's comp season. We're starting to get comps from everybody. They're making definitive statements. This player is exactly like this player or that player. So what are we here to do today, Austin?
What are we here to do? We are here to give our take on the draft comp, which is a callback from last year. And it's called This or That, because every single player, Colin, is either going to be this, meaning really good, or that, meaning not so good. And is it somewhere in the middle usually?
Never. Nope.
No.
Nope. Can't be.
Obviously not. You know, we're all about polarization in the world today, and the draft is absolutely no different than that. If, you know, you obviously have to, you know, if you don't love a player, you have
he
to
sucks.
Hate them. Yep. You can't.
It's over. Their career is done.
But so this is our way of having a little bit of fun with the idea of draft comps, because they are a very imperfect science. And with that, I will preface by saying these comps are not necessarily intended to be like 100% legit. Like, we're getting a little bit crazy on either side, but we'll kind of talk through how we got there for each of these players, and then hopefully land somewhere in the middle by the end of the discussion. But I'm feeling it in the air. It's draft season. I'm at the point of the process now where I'm starting to get a little nauseated by the amount of information and takes that are existing out there. So let's just pump some more of our own out into the universe. And we are going to start at the top. We got this broken out into different tiers of this class so that we get to talk about a few different levels of this class, talk about some guys that we want to talk about that maybe we haven't, but that's going to come later because we're starting with the top dogs, and we've talked enough about Marvin Harrison Jr. for the last 7-8 months, but we're getting very, very close, Colin, to Marvin Harrison Jr. becoming an NFL player. We understand where he'll be playing, and amid all of this discourse about Marvin, there have been plenty of folks throwing out takes. In my opinion, Marvin Harrison Jr. is either going to be prime A.J. Brown, or sorry, A.J. Green, prime A.J. Green, or a taller, quieter version of Michael Crabtree. Initial reactions.
I have heard the AJ Green. I was like, AJ Brown, wow, but AJ Green, that makes sense. I've heard that one before, and I like it a lot. I think AJ Green is a little bit slept on in terms of, because like people hear AJ Green is a comp for Marvin Harrison Jr. and they're like, is that like a no doubt? Like, yeah, it is. He's a all-pro type of guy. He's a pro bowler every year, like 1,200, 1,300 yards. AJ Green is a good player to become. So let's not worry about that. And Michael Crabtree, also good player. So that's a very high floor, I'd say. I like Michael Crabtree.
So, okay, let me talk through my process here. First and foremost, yes, AJ Green is a phenomenal player. I have also heard this slander about his name. And when I started playing Dynasty, AJ Green was the guy. I mean, we're in the middle of his early career stretch of, you know, 1,200 yards, 1,300 yards, 1,600 yards. Like, the guy was a freak of nature. And, you know, later career AJ Green amid, you know, some injuries and things like that, it kind of takes away, I think, from the image of the player as a whole. If Marvin Harrison Jr. is prime AJ Green for like an entire 8-year window, then this is that's all we could ask for.
Yep.
So, and I think it's completely in the actual range of outcomes for the player. This is one of my safer comps. Like you said, this is something that is out there. This isn't a unique take or anything, but it's just such a good comp for Marvin Harrison Jr. for his skill set, the acrobatics, the highlight catches, the spatial awareness, the ability to stretch the field at his size from the outside. It's all there. And how I got to Michael Crabtree on the other end is, I mean, when you look at Crabtree's peer numbers from his NFL career, it's not super impressive. I mean, he was a good player for a stretch of time with the 49ers, but he never quite made it to where he was supposed to be. And that's kind of where this comes from, is like Michael Crabtree coming out of Texas Tech was almost viewed in a similar way to Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know if it was quite at that level, but he was viewed as a, you know, top five talent. He was coming off of, I believe, back-to-back Biletnikoffs, putting up an obscene amount of stats in that air raid offense in Texas Tech. And he had a lot of fans coming into the process of like, this is the next wide receiver in the NFL, the next big guy that's going to come in and take over and shape the game. And I mean, was it transitioning from the scheme that he played in college? I mean, this is a different era of the NFL. He's drafted in 2008, I believe, somewhere in there. The air raid, you know, concepts not quite as prevalent in the NFL at that point in time. So there were some factors maybe at play, also some injuries that happened for Crabtree, but he never quite made it to being that player. He never quite became one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. So a lot of hype, a lot of college production. It can go wrong. It's not a foolproof process with these players. So I think Crabtree, though, represents definitely a that floor for Marvin. I don't expect it to happen, but hey.
I mean, like you said, Crabtree, top 10 pick. He went number 10 in his draft, and he was a guy that it feels like never reached the potential. And so that I totally understand is like, maybe Marvin Harrison like goes to a scheme or a team, maybe he goes to like New England and they have Jacoby Brissett there and they never quite figure out how to get him to reach that ceiling that we all kind of salivate thinking about, having, you know, that number one pick or number two pick in super flex leagues. Like, maybe that doesn't happen and it doesn't transpire the way we thought, but I think it's more likely that he ends up towards this range of outcomes.
Well, how about our next wide receiver? Because we're staying at the top of the class, Colin. You have Malik Nabers.
So for Malik Nabers, I have, this is Odell Beckham Jr. Or that is Miami Mike Wallace. Thoughts?
Man, I was really hoping you'd go there. I was really hoping we'd get an Odell comp for Malik because, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm kind of feeling it. Absolutely electrifying player. Not hard to envision them side by side, being that they wore the same uniform in college. I mean, I could see it. I'm just going to say it. I could see it. So on the other end, the Mike Wallace side of things, like, I'm trying not to see that. I don't want to see that. But, yeah, I mean, a kind of a peer field stretcher that never really takes it to the next level. I think I can see how you got there.
Yep. So Mike Wallace, we'll start with that part of things, was a 1,200-yard receiver with the Steelers first 3 years of his career. So that's why I went after that, as because it's like I can't say Malik Nabers' floor is going to be 1,300 yards. Like that feels, you know. So we're going with the deep threat that's putting up, you know, 900 yards a year, you know, 10 touchdowns. He's stretching the field. He's making it happen. But he's not quite the fantasy superstar that we all hope and want. But he's really helpful for an NFL team. And then the guy. I mean, I tried to stay away from the helmet comp. But when you look at guys that are this electrifying, that make people miss after the catch, that make people look silly on routes, I mean, they match up pretty closely, Odell and Nabers. Now, Nabers might not have the mitts that Odell has, but everything else is, it's getting pretty close. So, and people forget about Odell as well, because he was unbelievable for, I mean, from 2014 to until he gets injured, he was, you know, top 2-3 wide receiver in football as the, like, rookie second, third year. So if he turns out like that, that would be, you know, money in the bank for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't know, man. I've seen a few catches from Nabers during his time at LSU where I'm like, but I know what you're saying, and I mean, I've played Dynasty long enough to I lived through the Odell Beckham journey from draft pick to best receiver in the league, and then to like an afterthought. Really sad part of the low ends of these comps for these players, injuries, man.
Yep.
Because it's, sometimes it's just unavoidable. I mean, that's what happens in the league sometimes. So Odell, just in the same sense of as AJ Green once upon a time, these are premier talents that were maybe robbed of some of the later years of their career. But hey, Odell's still hanging around, making an impact how he can. So that's impressive enough, honestly. Hey,
we will all keep saying that he would have won Super Bowl MVP had he not got hurt last year. So whether that's true or not, nobody knows. But like, hey, he was on pace, man. So
yeah. He sure was.
Honorary Super Bowl MVP, Odell Beckham Jr.
All right, so Malik Nabers. we'll move on from him. We'll go to our third wide receiver. We all know the big top three, the big three atop this class, and we've had some pretty lofty top-end comps already with A.J. Green and Odell Beckham Jr.
Does it continue?
It's going to continue with Rome Odunze, because Odunze is either Larry Fitzgerald or he is the NFL version of Drake London. So the NFL Drake London, I'll clarify what I mean by that, even though you could probably figure it out for yourself, and then I'll let you give your take on this. For me, Odunze is such a solid prospect that the only thing that goes wrong for in my eyes is that he goes to a spot in which he is held back. Because my real comp, like my actual comp for Odunze, is just Drake London. That is the player that I saw 2 years ago when I first saw Odunze, and I was like, damn, this is dangerous, because I loved Drake London and I'm seeing parts of him in this player's game now evolving into this contested catch beast. Now you can really start to see that picture a little more clearly. And London is a player that has done well in the league during his 2 years on a pure, you know, performance basis, as an ability basis, but has been held back by quarterback play. And so I think, you know, there's a few spots there at the top of that, in that range, maybe number six, I don't know, New York, the Giants. Does he get held back by spotty quarterback play? And then 2 years from now, we're talking about, you know, will Odunze finally take that leap forward like we're doing with Drake London right now?
Yeah, I see some fits in Odunze, and I like Fitzgerald, man. The stat of he's had more tackles than drops, I don't think that's actually true. But, like, the idea around this player of a hyper-productive contested catch machine that also does, like, all the dirty work and is involved in every single play and will have a very long career because of not only, you know, how secure of a player he is, but also, you know, the IQ that he brings to the game. Like, all of that feels very much like Odunze. And then Drake London, like you said, it's just a matter of time with a player like that. And Odunze, I could very much see similarly. And I mean, a guy that will be a beast in the red zone, a guy that will get contested catches, but also is a little underrated in the other things that he does, which I feel like Odunze is. You know, he's a better separator than maybe he gets credit for, a better guy after the catch than he gets credit for. So pretty high expectations for Odunze in the Austin corner of things.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show what I think about the player. And I mean, I think this, like, this idea of Odunze kind of being this underneath target hog is something that was like, we did this with Drake London, where it's like we see him working down the field, making these highlight contested catches, and everybody says, oh, he's just this down the field, you know, jump ball guy. But it's like Drake London excels in those underneath routes. He excels in the slants and the hitches and those sorts of like money routes that are going to get you a ton of targets, a ton of receptions. I see Odunze in the same light, just like a Larry Fitzgerald, where it's a player that can work down the field. Like, don't get me wrong, they're going to work down the field, but they're going to make most of their money living underneath, getting easy targets, making catches every time. And I mean, also, Larry Fitzgerald, like, played long enough where we, you know, I have a vision of Larry Fitzgerald in my head. I was watching some, like, rookie year and like early career Fitzgerald today, man.
Insane player.
Crazy player.
Do you have his stats up in front of you?
Career stats?
Yeah, don't pull them up.
No, I don't.
Okay, so I want you to guess what his single season high in yards, receiving yards, is.
I'll say 1,560.
1,983.
Not bad.
It's just insane, the player that Fitzgerald was. And that's regular plus postseason, so a little inflated. But it's just he's a crazy player. And if Odunze comes anywhere near that, it would be a success.
So we have A.J. Green, Odell Beckham, and Larry Fitzgerald in this class. So not a bad one. But let's transition away from the wide receiver position, Colin, and talk about the other player that exists in this tier, which is Brock Bowers.
That's right. So Brock Bowers is either going to be, we all know at this point, George Kittle, or he's going to be Hayden Hurst.
Ooh.
let that sit for a minute. So George Kittle, obviously, first I'll let you give your initial reaction here.
I'm pulling up Hayden Hurst's mock draftable just because to refresh myself on the player and what he came into the league as. But the George Kittle side of things is becoming too easy.
Yeah.
You were very early on this comp. You said this like 3 months ago, and now I'm actually hearing it from like Daniel Jeremiah saying like, this is George Kittle, maybe.
Stealing my takes.
Yeah, DJ's been listening to the pod, apparently.
Take thief. It's okay. I'll let him borrow it this year.
I think Bowers to Kittle is not far off. I think it's like the high end comp is the comp with a player like Bowers because he's just that damn good. Hayden Hurst. How did we land on Hayden Hurst?
So Hayden Hurst, highly touted prospect. He's the 25th pick in 2018 and really just never quite got off the ground. He isn't quite an undersized tight end, but he's not also like a big tight end. He can block a little bit, but he never turned into like a blocking tight end in the NFL. But there was some down the field stuff that worked with Hurst, but he was better on the underneath stuff and then, you know, breaking a tackle or two, and that never quite translated. So this is just like if Brock Bowers doesn't quite translate one-to-one like we think he's gonna. And the thing is with my this or that here is I just don't see a world where he becomes Hayden Hurst, but who knows? Like, this is the world that we live in. Like, maybe it's just, oh, Brock Bowers isn't as good as we all thought he was, you know?
Listen, if there's one position where we've seen this happen enough times, it's the tight end position. I mean, how many players can we go back through the years and say, man, O.J. Howard, if we'd had a this or that for O.J. Howard, and then what that player ended up doing and becoming in the NFL. I mean,
I would have been like, man, that O.J. Howard's going to be Kellen Winslow.
Yeah.
That's where I would have been.
It's a tough position. And I mean, Bowers has done it at an extremely high level, at the highest level of college football, literally since he's done it, like since he was an incoming freshman, which is why we tend to feel very safe that he's going to be okay when he gets to the NFL level. But tight ends, man, can be very fickle, very unpredictable. So,
yeah, if he just doesn't get the volume that we expect. I mean, Hurst is still, like, getting contracts in the NFL.
Right.
So, still like, around. I mean, maybe he's banking on what he came into the league as still, as the 25th overall pick. So, I don't know.
All right, moving on. We are staying in the high end of this class. We are shifting out of a tier, but we each have a player, a different player, ranked at number 5. Mine is Brian Thomas Jr. And for me, Brian Thomas Jr. is either less Instagrammable DK Metcalf or DJ Chark.
Oh. DJ Chark had some good years on the Jags, man.
Hey, he had a hell of a year. He made a career off of that one year.
Yeah, I was going to say. less Instagrammable DK Metcalf is pretty good. DK Metcalf has a pretty unique personality and style and vibe. It would be I can see both ends of this like really clearly, which is this is the first one where it's like we don't feel so confident that they're going to be close or like pretty close to the ceiling comp. Brian Thomas is like, man, there's a world where he is DK Metcalf and he's like a big downfield threat that, you know, gets past people because he has surprising speed for his size. And then there's a world where it's like, oh, flash in the pan, Brian Thomas Jr. Like, why can't he figure it out again? Like, where's this player? And that's kind of how a lot of people feel about DJ Chark, I think. I could see him leaning more towards the DK side. I don't know if he quite gets there, but I mean, man, those are good comps.
Yeah, I do try to pick mine based off of like size, athleticism, and then also like project the player and what they did at the NFL level. And this is just so interesting because there are just so many players like this, and it's just completely opposite sides of the spectrum. And like the low-end comp here being DJ Chark is not a bad thing. And it goes into what I was saying with I think Brian Thomas Jr. is a high-floor player because at the very least, he's a 6'2", 209, 4'3'3 player that can win down the field. And, you know, DJ Chark, if you weren't around for the Chark craze, 6'3", 199, ran a 4'3'4". And that at that time, it was like, whoa, that time is ridiculous. Got him into the second round of the draft to Jacksonville. And he had an amazing sophomore season. He kind of like became this dynasty piece. Like, is this now, you know, the guy in Jacksonville? And then kind of fizzled out because he never quite developed beyond, you know, his one trick, which the was the deep speed and
the Minshew DJ Chark connection, man.
And that's exactly what I'm saying here. Like, Brian Thomas Jr. is going to walk in. He's going to be big, fast. He can, you know, we're going to get red zone work. We're going to get these big plays. But the best case scenario is that he develops his game similarly to how DK Metcalf did, where DK's running goes. He's running, you know, we got some slants in there, but we're not doing a lot else off of that, you know, vertical route. That's like the real nucleus of the route tree. And I mean, DK just evolved. Like he absolutely evolved and became one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. What's funny here is that both of these players, Metcalf and Chark, were drafted in the late second, and Brian Thomas Jr. might go top 20. So I found that a little bit interesting. I think Brian Thomas Jr. has more production on his side in college than either of these players did coming in. And obviously, you know, he's a little bit bigger than Chark, a little bit smaller than Metcalf, a little better agility, I think, from Brian Thomas Jr. But yeah, he's probably going to get picked like 50 spots ahead of where those players went. So
interesting. It's interesting. The one thing I just wanted to check was wingspan, because I know DK isn't the best jump ball guy, and it's because he doesn't have like super long arms.
DK's wingspan is just a hair short of 83 inches.
Yes. Brian Thomas Jr., 79 inches, a hair short of 80. So they're close, but also not super long arms. But I was just thinking, like, Brian Thomas feels like he goes up and plucks the ball out in contested catch situations. And DK always feels like he's kind of alligator arming it and going up and, like, pinning it against his chest. I was wondering if it was a wingspan thing, but apparently not.
What do you think, DK Metcalf sucks or something?
I think that he should be a lot better at jump balls for how big he is how I feel.
All right. Your number five player, is that still true as of April 1st, 2024, Colin?
I don't know. It's all I don't know where I am on any of these guys. I talked to you about this the other day. I was like, man, it's hard to like separate what even are my takes anymore and like what I've been hearing. Like there's, like you said, there's so much content out there. And you try not to let it sway you, but enough people tell you Keon Coleman sucks. Well, come to this program, and you'll hear that he's either DeAndre Hopkins or Kelvin Benjamin. So, what do you think?
Man. The Hopkins comp. That one's tough for me. Because the Kelvin Benjamin one. let's talk about that. I can see the Kelvin Benjamin one a little bit. Obviously, Benjamin was a little bit of a different breed because he was like a mammoth. And a great jump ball player. Had a good year, 2 years in the NFL just basically because of that with the Cam Newton connection. I think that is a solid idea of a floor for Keon Coleman is just like this guy that's like Yeah, he's catching some cool touchdowns. He looks really big and athletic sometimes, and then where is he like the rest of the time? And then the Hopkins, how did we get to Hopkins? What's the rationale? The route running discrepancy is where I'm having a hard time.
So DeAndre Hopkins is one of the most impressive ball winners and run after the catch wide receivers in the league. In his prime, at least. And I think as he became a better player, he honed in the route running part of the game and the separation part of the game. I think that he's much lighter on his feet and a lot more sudden than Keon Coleman is. But when it comes to the other traits that Hopkins has, I think Coleman shares those traits. And if Coleman can become a better separator, I think he can become DeAndre Hopkins-ish. But I think that there is a vibe here where, I don't think people realize how good after the catch DeAndre Hopkins is. And I think, Keon Coleman, I don't think people realize how good of a catch after the catch he is. And, you can just – they were using him as their, main screen guy at Florida State. And obviously people have heard ad nauseum the punt return stuff because of just how good he is at making people miss after the catch. And then when it comes to the contested catch stuff, he's an aggressive ball winner with great hands. And so I think, yes, the separation is the one thing where he's not DeAndre Hopkins. And I don't think he is DeAndre Hopkins today. But if he can become a better separator, who knows where we can go?
No, you said he is DeAndre Hopkins. That's
right. That's where we are.
No, I get it. And it's an interesting conversation, too, because I feel like it illustrates two ways of thinking about a player like this. A, he's 20 years old. He flashes some skill. He's an athlete. Can we develop him down a path that we want him to go down? Can we develop him into this outside receiver, this boundary player? Can he become better at that role? Because he looks like the prototype. He looks like the player that we should want in that spot. He's not doing it right now. Can he develop? So that's path one, where an NFL team drafts this guy and says, we're going to develop you into this role. The other side is you're not really good at this role that it looks like you should be in. What if you played this role instead? And I think the latter is what we're starting to see more often in the NFL, because we had a very long history of these sorts of players just completely fizzling out immediately, and it was what's going on? And that's not to say that it's over either, because this is literally what happened to Quentin Johnston last season. Literally. I mean,
it's what happened to Treylon Burks a couple years ago.
It's yes, exactly.
Just Treylon shoved Burks into the X role when you've never played it.
Yep. This is a big wide receiver. We want him to play X. We want him to play on the sideline. We want him to stretch the field against press coverage. When the player can't do it, suddenly now, oh, man, Treylon Burks, he might be a bust. Hey, Quentin Johnston, he's only played 1 year. He might be a bust. The other direction is what we saw with a player like Rashee Rice last year, where it's, let's not ask him to do something because we want him to look a certain way because of the size and the profile that he brings. Let's use him in a way where we can maximize his skills and get the best out of the player. And I think Keon Coleman, honestly, is a player that just needs that path. I think he just...
Bring up Rashee Rice?
What? Too soon. He's cooperating with the investigation now, at least. So
he's got no choice at this point.
Yeah, a wild story. But the Jonathan Mingos of the world here,
LaVisca Chenault.
Laviska Shenault, like, let's not let Keon Coleman down that road. Let's get him into a building, into an organization that knows his limitations and is willing to maximize his strengths and not throw him into positions where he is set up to fail at the NFL level. So that was like a really long-winded rant off of like your comp kind of, and then I kind of just ran with it. But
yeah,
there you have
it. You said that he's going to be Kelvin Benjamin.
That's exactly what I said. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'll never forgive you for that.
All right. So that is the top part of this group. We have six players on the quote unquote top end of the class. Now we're going to talk about some players from the mid tier of the class, meaning players that are likely to be available either at the tail end of the first round or into the second round come dynasty rookie draft time. And first up, first running back of the program, I am talking Trey Benson, my RB1. Trey Benson is either going to be DeMarco Murray or Tevin Coleman with a little bit of wiggle.
It's a good player. Tevin Coleman with some wiggle. I like that guy.
That's right? That's what it's,
yeah. I'm interested to hear, because I don't see DeMarco Murray and Trey Benson, so I'm interested to hear what's up with that.
Yeah, so DeMarco Murray was a player. I mean, athletically, we're talking about a very similar player size-wise as well. Benson, 6 foot, 216, obviously runs the 4.39. We got solid jumps, vertical, questionable. DeMarco Murray, 6'1", 213, ran a 4.37. Jumps were fine. The broad jump was excellent. The vertical was So, I mean, at a very literal sense, these players tested and look very similar. Then you get into the game, and I think, you know, Trey Benson, obviously we remember 2022 as this like elastic, dynamic, like rubber band man running out there, like he's doing things that the human body shouldn't do. And I think he was a little bit of a different player this year, and I wonder if that's more of a glimpse at what we should have expect of him in the NFL. So I think that kind of lines up to me with a player like DeMarco Murray, who got drafted in the third round, which is where we're talking about a guy like Trey Benson. But also, Murray came with this caveat of he has a lot of talent. For him, it was some injuries in his background in college that might have pushed him down the board a little bit. And then when we, you know, we saw what happened, he gets into this, you know, electric scheme in Dallas and, you know, has this phenomenal run, becomes one of the best running backs in the NFL. So that is very clearly a this comp for Trey Benson. His maximum development path is right system, right situation. You know, he can become a player that, you know, becomes maybe one of the best running backs in the NFL. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I can see the idea of him like landing in the right scheme and being utilized as a number one running back, and, you know, they play to his strengths. I could see that. So that makes a lot of sense. I think DeMarco was a little more of like the downhill kind of guy, and Benson has a little more, you know, like you said, wiggle and bounce to him. But the idea of, well, if he's in the right spot, you know, who knows what can happen. And that's really kind of how I feel about a lot of the guys in this class, is like, if they land in the right spot and they scheme for him and he's like the number one running back, then we can start talking about they're the guy in this class. So, and Tevin Coleman with some wiggle. If Tevin Coleman could stay healthy, man.
Well, and that's the other thing. Tevin Coleman, like, not a bad NFL player, like, had a role, but that's just it. He had a role. He was always a guy in, you know, primarily Atlanta's backfield, he was never like the guy. Right. You know, he was always 1B. And you had a lot of people saying, so, like, man,
a handcuff.
Yeah. I mean, it was like Devontae Freeman's there and, you know, other guys coming in and out. There was always this chatter of like, you know, let's make Tevin Coleman the guy. Like, what happens when we unleash Tevin, you know? And I could see Trey Benson having a similar arc to that in the NFL, where it's like Tevin Coleman's best seasons were like 800 yards rushing, 900 yards rushing. He did that like once or twice. I could see Benson kind of having his moment, having his year or two. People are like, man, can we get this guy featured? He's fun to watch. He looks kind of good when he's out there, but does he have what it takes to be that top back, that number one option, and carry a backfield?
I like it.
Hell yeah, man. Who do you have for your first mid-tier player?
My first mid-tier player, I'll stick with the running backs.
Let's do it.
Jonathan Brooks is my running back one these days. And
whoa, hey, yeah, breaking news just, on the pod.
Yeah. You could hear how certain that was. Nothing is set in stone until we do it on the rankings episode. So I'm just kind of saying stuff here, but, he'll either be Todd Gurley or Peyton Barber is what Jonathan Brooks will be.
I love it.
Thoughts? Initial thoughts?
Oh, man. Peyton Barber. That is a freaking name, man. I got to refresh my memory. That's Buccaneers, I believe.
Yep.
Oh,
Tampa
man.
Bay, 2016 to 2019, and then went to Washington and Oakland.
I can't. The sheer number of running back names that you can go through and be like, I'm pretty sure he was on my fantasy team for like 2 weeks at one point.
Yep.
That's... the Todd Gurley one, let's start with that.
Yeah, let's start with that.
I'm guessing here it's the idea that he is kind of an offensive weapon, a little bit of pass game work tied in here. We got to project a little bit of that with Brooks, but I feel pretty good that he can handle a passing workload in addition to being a runner. Got some dynamic running ability, one cut, really elusive runner, going to be a little electrifying. Are we tying in a knee injury thing here as well?
I was trying not to, but like, I mean, it's there, you know,
might as well use it.
You know, they get it. That's not why I picked this, but yeah. That's, you know.
I mean, but, man, getting Todd Gurley at pick what? 110, 111 in the draft. I wouldn't hate it.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, I think Brooks, like, Todd Gurley was never – well, Todd Gurley was an incredible, like, fantasy player for his entire St. Louis career. And he also, like, on top of being – you know, 1,400 yards rushing. He was also like 700 yards receiving. And I could see a world where Jonathan Brooks is getting the bulk of the carries in a good offense and being utilized as a pass catcher and like having his pass catching skill honed in. Because right now it's not super apparent if he can be a good pass catcher or not. They just didn't like use him that much as a pass catcher. And I would like to see a team just throw him a couple balls and see what happens, you know? And if he ends up being a elite pass catcher, then you could be seeing somebody with elite upside like Todd Gurley. Now, hopefully he doesn't develop arthritis and, you know, burn out by year six of their career. But, Gurley, the flame burned hot and fast for Todd Gurley.
Nuclear hot. Just absolute nuclear weapon, and then it was just over.
Yeah.
Guess who Todd Gurley's closest mock draftable match is?
Marshall Faulk.
No. Okay. Worse. Oh. Still in the league.
Tell me.
Deonta Foreman.
Really?
So, athletic testing, you know, it's not, we can't always do a one-for-one thing with these guys, but.
No.
All right.
You don't have any Peyton Barber thoughts before we go?
How did we get to Peyton Barber? I just pulled up his stats, and I saw the best year we had was 200 yards rushing, and I'm like, damn, dude.
So his best season was 2018. He had 871 yards rushing.
Wait, what? What the hell am I looking at?
I don't know. Are you looking at Peyton Barber, P-E-Y-T-O-N? Oh,
yeah, I see. I just skipped over that number. I saw 200, 400, and then just I threw up a little bit, I think.
So what I'm looking at, he had a very high missed tackle force number, not a lot of volume. The one year where he had decent volume, you know, he put together a solid season, but just never really became a featured piece of any offense. He kind of just bounced around a little bit and never made a mark on the league is kind of where I'm at with Peyton Barber. And that's, you know, Jonathan Brooks ends up being, you know, third round pick and ends up just kind of in a depth chart. Oh, this is a fun player. What's going on here? And I don't know.
Peyton Barber, man. There was buzz, like there always is with running backs. It's like you get
he could just be a name lost to time.
Exactly. Will Jonathan Brooks be the player in like 6 years from now that we're like, that comp is Jonathan Brooks? You remember him? I don't like thinking about that.
I don't like that at all.
Let's talk about more wide receivers. Yeah. All right. Ladd McConkey. Quickly becoming.
Are you going to do it?
Yeah, he's either Cooper Kupp or Hunter Renfro. No, pack it up. Pack it up. No, we're not doing that because it's not real. We all know it's not real. The narrative that he's not a slot wide receiver is now played out. Like, it's like a cliche to say that he's not now because of how focused we are that he is not that sort of a player. So, with that said, Ladd McConkey is either lanky and more reserved Steve Smith or Elijah Moore.
Okay. Yeah, a lot more reserved.
A lot more reserved. I watched some Steve Smith highlights today, and every single one of them involved him like dancing or doing something after the play was over.
So this is a great route runner, a tough player that can get yards after the catch and is stronger than his size would suggest. And it just, you know, I still have faith in Elijah Moore. Still on the Elijah Moore train. But, man, Steve Smith would be a, you know, 100 out of 100 outcome for Ladd.
Right. And that's, I mean, the thing is, like, I felt it was very necessary to call him a lanky version of Steve Smith, because if you watch Steve Smith, you see
compact.
You see the lower half, you see the toughness, and you know, but what really caught me was like how many plays Steve Smith catches a ball in the middle of the field and just houses it.
Yep.
And I think McConkey is the sort of player that we didn't get to see a ton of it in college. And this year was in part due to injuries, but it feels like more times than not, when I see McConkey touch the ball, it's a very explosive and electric play. I mean, the white slot like prototype here was shattered the first time I even watched McConkey. The first exposure I had to this player was in 2022 watching Georgia and being like, who the hell is 84? He's like, he's flying. He's like the fastest guy I've ever seen. So that's the sort of player you're getting. You're getting an amazing separator, an amazing route runner, nuanced route runner, but one that when he catches the ball in an open space, he is a threat to take it to the house on any play. So that's how we get to the very top, tippy top end for McConkey. Right. And the bottom end with Elijah Moore is, I just think McConkey's like, McConkey has enough fans, I think, at this point to be like a player where if he goes down an Elijah Moore track where it's like, whether it's situational or whatever it might be, you're always going to have people in year 3, 4, whatever, being like, hey, Ladd McConkey, though, like, what do you want for him? Or, like, you know, he's always going to be a player that's on somebody's radar as, like, a breakout candidate if he hasn't done it yet. So
maybe with Keon Coleman.
Yeah.
I can picture it, like, wow, Keon's on waivers. Right. In, like, year 5.
Yeah. I'm going to roll the dice, man. I didn't quit Corey Davis until the day he retired. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I feel like Ladd is definitely creating a fan base, and I respect that you went with zero white comps.
Yeah.
For McConkey. I like that, because it's so easy to just be like, you know, Julian Edelman for Ladd. it's like, he doesn't play anything like him. What do you mean? And I really do like the Elijah Moore comp, because I could see him playing out both ways that Elijah Moore could have played out. So,
right.
And Elijah Moore is in the that portion of his career right now.
Yeah, that like, I could see that being like a real comp for him. Like, because, I mean, it's not like Elijah Moore's career is over either.
Right.
Like, there's still a range, but, like, I think people by now are like, well, is he... If that's it, like, I don't
really
care. We're
3 years in. He's on the second team.
Like, I think from a prospect basis, I think it's a pretty solid comp. I do want to ask you, though, before we move on, because I almost did this just to have the conversation, but I don't love it. Garrett Wilson keeps getting connected to Ladd McConkey because of the measurables and the testing. And, like, I've seen several people now, like, throw it out there, kind of like, I'm not saying, but I'm kind of saying. I don't really see the, like, stylistic comparison between the two players, but I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I mean, I understand, like, where they're coming from. The idea of, like, great releases, great at the top of the route, good after the catch. Like, I understand. I feel like Ladd wastes no motion, while Garrett Wilson is much more of a, you know, a flashy route runner, I guess you could say. But I get the idea of, like, if you, like, blanked out, like, black and white everything, like, you can't tell what jersey they're wearing, anything, like, there's an idea of, like, hey, there's probably an analytical similarity with those guys too.
Yeah, I think that's maybe where it comes from as well. But it is interesting that, like, they're almost identical in terms of testing. So
right.
Okay. I don't know, McConkey. We're doing a rankings update here in a couple weeks. I don't know. I might shock the world. But anyway, you're up.
Yep, I'm up with Malachi Corley, and he'll either be DJ Moore, or he'll be 2015 Torrey Smith.
Okay. I got to refresh my memory on what Torrey Smith was up to.
I'm digging deep in the bag for these guys.
I love it, man. Absolutely love it. The DJ Moore one, I mean, play style, obviously, right?
Yep. Same size. They're both 5'11", 210. Right around the same 40 time. I mean, DJ Moore, obviously, Corley's not going to be the 24th pick in the draft, but yeah, they match up pretty closely. Torrey Smith. He was a 49er in 2015.
Ah.
Yep.
First year out of Baltimore.
That's right.
And 663 yards.
Yep.
Hey, 20 per reception, though.
That's right. The big number, 6.8 yards after catch per
there
reception.
There it is.
That's where we're going here with Torrey Smith. Also, I mean... 6'205", we're looking at a 4.4 speed guy. Second rounder with Torrey Smith. He obviously pumped out a couple of good years in Baltimore, but all in all was, you know, a solid receiver, a reliable guy, but nothing that was world-breaking. Has a little bit higher ADOT than I expect Corley to have, but if Corley is used like this, I could very well expect him to have a higher ADOT. You know, if he gets put in offense kind of like you were talking about with guys that have skill sets that are translatable to different offensive styles, I feel like Corley could be a better, deeper, like, he could be better down the field than we know, but we just don't know right now. So,
yeah, I mean, there's flashes of it. There's some moments on Corley's film where he's winning deep, making good catches down the field. But I'm honestly just, like, so impressed that you did this without mentioning Deebo Samuel. Like, that's impressive enough right there.
I'm upset that his name came up. I was avoiding all of the names that come up with the Yak guys. I stayed away from them, and I came up. I told you before, I'm like, everybody does the same goddamn comps for everybody. Like, I'm going to come on here, and I'm going to figure out ones that work that aren't the same, and I wasn't going to say the D word.
DJ Moore. Honestly, like, that's not one I really would have thought of, because I feel like DJ Moore is just leaner. Like, he carries his weight a little. Like, Corley is just so stocky. Right. Like, thick, and but I'm looking at it right now, and yeah, I mean, size testing, I mean, DJ Moore maybe a little bit faster. I don't know, did we gas up the 40 at the Corley pro day?
What's Corley's 40 time?
I thought it was, let's see, I saw online he ran like a 4.45 or something.
4.46.
yeah.
I'm seeing on PFF that DJ Moore ran a 4.56.
I got 4.42 on mock draftable. The internet has no idea.
They're the same player, though. I'm using Bing, so it's probably wrong.
It's the AI result again.
Yeah, my computer is probably doing me dirty.
No, Corley, though, we'll talk about a player a little bit later. We'll do a little bit of a compare contrast, because I'm teasing a later spot in the episode, but let's move 4.42
is correct via NFL.com.
4.42 is correct. Okay. Yes. So, I mean, slightly. So, if we believe the 4.46 on Corley, then yep, it's pretty close. Okay. So
here we are.
I don't even need to tease, because I could just segue to the player that I'm referring to right now, because we are moving into the sleeper portion of the program. These are players that most likely get drafted late second or later in a dynasty rookie draft. It's not a hard, fast rule at this point, obviously, without landing spots, but some guys that we just want to talk about that don't get included in the conversation typically because they're later names in this class. And I mean, in this class, you're talking about really good players as later names. So Malik Washington, Colin, is the player that I want to talk to you about here, because we talk a lot about Corley as like this slot yak weapon guy in the class, but I don't know, Malik Washington starting to win my heart as potentially the yak weapon of his own in this class. Malik Washington is either Sterling Shepard with a yak mod or a thinner Amari Rodgers.
I feel like neither of these are very good.
Okay, hold on. I knew you were going to say that.
No, I know that that Sterling Shepard, I like Sterling Shepard as a player, and I always have. But please, I need to hear the Sterling Shepard defense as the ceiling.
Okay, so I understand, and I would have thought this myself had I not learned a lot about Sterling Shepard today. But Sterling Shepard once upon a time was like a high profile dynasty rookie prospect. Like he was drafted like fourth, fifth in the league, in my league, primary league. Like he was a high second round pick, like 40th overall, had a, you know, coming in from Oklahoma off of a really good season, like very productive slot player, comes into the league, has three good seasons in New York. Like not like 1200 yards, but like he had like 800 yards, 900 yards receiving, playing from the slot, and he got paid $40 million contract extension with the Giants, and then the injuries start piling up. So you feel like it's a player that's on the precipice of a breakout, of becoming maybe one of the best slot receivers in the NFL consistently. And he gets his payday, and now suddenly he can't stay healthy. And we're still dealing with this. I mean, this is not a player that's, you know, gone and forgotten. Like, he's in the league. We're still doing Sterling Shepard injuries to this day. So I think
he has one of the craziest injuries I've ever seen. Do you remember the last time, I think he tore his ACL? He was just like jogging.
Just like, I don't remember that. No.
He was just jogging like straight up the field, like, and just tore his ACL. Didn't cut, nothing. Just like out of nowhere. I don't know.
So maybe the caveat here is like also a no injuries mod. Like I put the yak mod on it. We're just modding the shit out of Sterling Shepard, and now we got Malik Washington. But so, I mean, Washington. Malik Washington.
On the mind.
He is, because they're very similar players. They really are. I mean, Malik Washington, I've watched a little bit more film on him because some more stuff dropped recently, all 22 for Malik Washington. So dive in a little bit more. Man, he is phenomenal after the catch. I mean, he's phenomenal. This was your leader in missed tackles forced from the wide receiver position in college football last season with 35. So he's playing like a running back. I mean, in the same fashion that Corley does. But when we look at 2023, it was actually Washington doing it at a higher level. That 2022 Corley season is still like a thing of myth with his 900 yards after the catch. But Washington is a player here that I think we're getting a discount on him. Expect him to be a third round dynasty rookie pick. Maybe later, but probably somewhere in the third round, depending on his NFL draft capital. But man, I really think this guy has the skills, the game to be a real contributor. And, you know, if he has a Sterling Shepard arc, if you're picking him at like 309 and he is like a couple 900 yard seasons in the NFL, I mean, I'll consider that a win. Now, if he's Amari Rodgers, that's another
story. Don't consider that a win. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about Amari Rodgers, but I liked Sterling Shepard. I still kind of like Sterling Shepard. I'll, you know, look at him when you're in redraft, like the last round, and you're like, Sterling Shepard's still on the board. You know, I could
sneaky.
What if he's back? But it might be over for Sterling Shepard after, you know, an Achilles and an ACL. But
unfortunate.
If Malik Washington ends up being Shepard, that would absolutely be a win. And just a consistent, nice slot weapon that demands targets. And that's what Shepard was early in his career. And if you add a yak mod onto him, you demand targets and then you do a lot with them. So, Washington's a fun player.
All right. Your first sleeper, Colin.
So I don't know how much of a sleeper this player is these days. But we're going with Ricky Pearsall. And Ricky is either 2014 Jeremy Maclin or he's Jason Avant.
Ooh. Hitting the Eagles receivers.
Yep, the teammates at one point. Well, first thoughts, I guess. I'll let you.
Yeah. I mean, I like the Maclin comp a lot, actually. I'd have to go back and refresh my memory on Maclin a little bit. But, yeah, the 2014, that is his, like, big year.
That's his 1,300-yard Philadelphia year.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, this is another player that maybe folks want to put him into a box that he doesn't belong in. Very high-end athlete with a little bit of size. The Macklin comp is, it's moving me a little bit. I don't know.
Okay. How many drops do you think Jeremy Macklin had in 2014?
Oh, God. Zero?
One. Just one. I mean, both of these guys, great hands, reliable receivers. Avant, obviously not as productive, but he was consistent. Like a 600-yard receiver year after year from 2009 to 2012. And then, you know, some 400 yards. Like, he was on rosters for 9 years. And then Macklin, he was, like, a little less consistent, but the highs were a lot higher for Macklin. And if you're talking about a guy that's explosive, that is reliable, that can make a couple plays for you, and then, you know, can do some things after the catch, is a decent route runner. Like, I feel like Macklin and Pearsall line up in a few different ways. And Pearsall is even a little more athletic than Macklin was profiled, which is pretty wild because Macklin, good athlete, and ended up being the 19th overall pick.
To your point, like, I don't know how much of a sleeper Ricky is at this point, but yeah, like, it's also a product of the class where start listing them, right? You know, like, who are the receivers that go, that no doubt go above him? And then who are the guys that are like in his range, and how many of those guys have like very strong fan bases, yeah, you know? So it's like, am I getting a player like this in the late second? I might be. And that's pretty exciting, especially when we consider, you know, the this comp of a 1,300 yard receiver at the NFL level. So, man, I want more late seconds.
Just like, this is one of those classes that it's like, oh, should I trade this guy just so I can have a chance, yeah, at one of these people?
Well, that's how I'm feeling about my next player, my second sleeper here. One of my favorite players in the entire class. It's Jalen Polk. And this is a player type that I will fall for every year. And it will go one of two ways. Jalen Polk is either pre-injury Hakeem Nicks.
Hey, 2 years in a row. Or, no, Josh Palmer wasn't last year. Damn it. I comp Josh Palmer to Hakeem Nicks.
He's a popular comp name because he's what could have been, man, with Hakeem, right, Nicks. That's what I'm saying. Or Jalen Polk is Cedric Tillman, because we just did this. Because I'm going to do it every year with this type of wide receiver. I mean, it really is my type, you know, a player that we're past the top end. We're past the, like, no doubt sorts of prospects. Get into this next range. This is a player type that I identify almost every year. I always find a guy. Sometimes they hit, sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's Hakeem Nicks, sometimes it's Cedric Tillman, who's not dead yet.
Yeah, but
I'm doing this to illustrate a point about myself.
Yeah.
And we can look at what Tillman did as a rookie and say, you know, we got an uphill battle to climb at this point. But what do you think about this?
I like it. Polk is a big play guy, and kind of the forgot. I don't know if he's a forgotten man in the Washington offense, but like, it seems to be all Romo Dunze right now, and McMillan and Polk seem to kind of be cast aside. And both of them were very good. Like, Polk came in lieu of the McMillan injury and became the number two wide receiver in this offense and put crazy numbers up. And I could very well see him coming in and being a solid physical wide receiver that, you know, can make big plays more often than not in games. So, I mean, I like the Tillman. I think he could have gone Josh Palmer for the floor, but
there's a laundry list.
Yeah, there's so many
that guys. Because we do this a lot, and the player, the outside receiver with size, with toughness, with strong hands, you plenty of highlight catches. It's just, you know, the consistency factor, the how well can we run routes as this player type? How much does it matter? You know, the fearless nature in the middle of the field. Like, it looks awesome when you're like catching stuff and taking big hits, but like, how many times does that really factor into the?
And when you're doing it against the Pac-12 versus like,
right,
Dre Greenlaw trying to, right, like murder right, you.
Yeah. So I'm falling for it again, and I probably will forever, but hey, sometimes it just becomes a 1,600-yard wide receiver named Hakeem Nicks, whose career was tragically cut short by several injuries, and we will never quite know what he could have been. But
well, let's talk about a guy that's my type, that's a sleeper, and that's Javon Baker.
Boom.
Man, he's either going to be Garrett Wilson or Jerry Jeudy.
Bang.
I love it.
Yeah.
You nailed it.
What do you want?
You nailed it. Like, that's literally like the perfect way to put it. And like, I understand like Jerry Jeudy as a low end comp for a player like Baker, who like some people might not even know who that is, and I wouldn't blame them because
learn the name.
He's just another wide receiver in this class, and it's like really hard when you have to, we're going like 25 deep at this point. But when we think about what Jerry Jeudy is in the NFL, like what he became and what he is to this day, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that this is a low end comp for a player like Baker. Another player that I just recently watched, we had a film drop. I was finally able to watch Baker, and he's very interesting because of this conversation right here, where how much do you trust the flashes that you saw in terms of his lower body fluidity, his route running flashes? We got some kind of crazy catches. Like, these are all things that showed up on like Garrett Wilson's film. And like, Garrett Wilson is a top 10 pick because he's, you know, doing it at a high level, Ohio State, like extreme production behind him. Baker is a player that it took him a little while to get to where he is. Starts at Alabama, ends up at UCF, finally breaks 1,000 yards this year. I don't know, man. I'm really interested by this player. I don't think I like him quite as much as you do today, but I can really see this like range of outcomes for this player in terms of the floor might just be a really solid NFL player.
Yeah. I don't know if there's many people that are as high on Baker as I am right now. But you know, he's got the flash that both of these players had. He doesn't have the legacy and the polish that either of these players had coming out of college. Like you said, Jeudy coming out of Alabama, you know, being incredible at his time at Alabama, and Garrett Wilson, you know, being a machine pumping out stats there. And Baker, he also is a little, he's a little like thicker than Wilson and Jeudy, who are a little wiry, but he's also not like as good of a route runner as either of those guys. So it's not a perfect comp, but it feels good because he has that the vibe about him.
Yeah, a little slower than those players.
Yeah,
but especially Garrett Wilson, but like, the vibes, the style, the type of receiver that you get with Baker, I can definitely see it. So, all right, we have two players left, Colin, and they're both IDPs because IDPs are people too.
That's right.
And I will start with my IDP one of this class, Jared Verse, one of my favorite players in this entire draft class. Jared Verse is either long road there, Kayvon Thibodeau, or Quiddy Pay. Instant reaction.
Yeah, I like Quiddy Pay coming out.
Same.
Now I'm coming back. I'm like, man, what's going on with Quiddy Pay these days? Because it's a totally forgettable player now.
I want to expand on that because, like, I don't want Quiddy Pay to feel disrespected by this because I think, and I've said this, I think Jared Verse has a high floor in the NFL. So I didn't want to go too low with my low end. And Quiddy Pay is a player that has gotten better over his 3 years in the NFL. Like, there were enough Colts fans last year that were like, man, this player might be turning into something right now. But that is exactly why he's on the low end. Because with a player like Verse, when we're thinking about drafting him in the second round, I don't want 3 years. Like, he's 24. I'm spending a second round pick on him. If he's Quiddy Pay, I feel like I kind of lost my investment a little bit, though I can see that in his range of outcomes of being this sort of slow burn, like solid but not excellent NFL player. Whereas on the other side, Kayvon Thibodeau, and this is more of Thibodeau as a prospect versus like what we've seen from him right now, but like Thibodeau had it all, right? He's like the top recruit. He's the promised son to the Oregon program. He's got all the endorsement deals. He's going to be the number one pick. Verse was a player that starts at the FCS level. He takes the long road there. But now he's got himself to a point where I feel like as prospects, they're not far off. They're not far off. I mean, it's a this comp. It's a little rich. But, like, I see a lot of similarities with those two players.
Yeah, I can see the Thibodeau thing, too. I feel like the athleticism and the strength that Verse plays with, if given some more polish, can create a double-digit sack guy. On the other hand, like, the Quiddy Pay thing, I was saying, like, he's in the national, like, talks of things. Like, you know, a forgettable player, which is fine. Like, 8 sacks, okay. Like, it is what it is. You can be a nice piece on a team competing for second place in the AFC South. That's all right. You can make a long career out of that. But, I think that that Verse will probably end up closer to the Thibodeau end of things.
Thibodeau, man. The 13 sack number this year, people were not fooled. The Giants fans, I did a little bit of a Twitter dive because I was like, what's the water temp on Thibodeau right now? Just because, like, we had the good production, but I've also heard some not great things, and his PFF grades were kind of bad, and Giants fans are like, he's a coverage sack merchant. What the hell is wrong? And I'm like, oh, God, I got to get out of here. Anyway, take the floor. Final player for this or that.
All right. This is irresponsible, but my Leiatu Latu this or that, he'll either be TJ Watt or Trey Hendrickson. Thoughts?
I'm in. I actually like the Hendrickson comp, like, straight up.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good comp for him. I think, like, Hendrickson's a player that is very underrated.
I agree.
Like, if Latu has a Hendrickson career, I think that's pretty damn successful. Now, if he has a Watt career, then...
Not bad either.
Not too bad either, but, hey, I like Latu a lot. You know that. Yeah. You like him even more than me. I know that. And I know that you don't think this is entirely ridiculous.
Yeah. So the reason I picked these players is because of play style, more or less. Hendrickson has some of the best hands in football on the edge. And that is what makes Latu so good, is his hand technique on top of his just relentless nature, which is where we get to the ceiling comp of TJ Watt. Watt, he is more than just an edge player, because Watt can do basically anything on a defense, which you can see out of Latu on his film. But Latu is also just constantly pushing. If the quarterback has the ball in his hands, Latu is trying to beat that tackle. There's no point in a snap where Latu's like, hey man, I'm good. And that is why Watt puts up these ridiculous sack numbers, because while he might not be like the perfect pass rusher, like you look at his moveset versus like a Myles Garrett moveset, and Myles Garrett like is a better pass rusher. But TJ Watt is just like, he's coming. Like, the motor is unbelievable. And I think Latu has that. So that's where this comes from. It's more of a play style comp than like a production comp, because I'm not saying that he is guaranteed to be like a 20 sack player, but I can see him being, you know, very productive for a long time, as long as he can stay healthy.
You know what's fun about the NFL draft is that nobody thought TJ Watt was going to be a 20 sack player either.
True.
Wasn't picked number one. Wasn't picked number two. Wasn't picked top five.
The Packers passed on him for Kevin King.
They sure did. I think about it more than that. I should.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it, man. These are human beings with real motivations, with personalities, and it's hard to project what they will become, and that is exactly why a comp can sometimes be a futile exercise. But maybe there was some truth in our this or that comps. Today, we will have to wait and find out, but we will not be waiting much longer, Colin, for the NFL draft, because it is coming very quickly. We are in the midst of our path to the draft, which means we're only dialing it up from here. Next week, we're bringing back another Path to the Draft favorite, Flavors of Takes, where we will get to really take a step back and think about the NFL draft and the narratives and what we think is going to happen in only a few weeks' time, to varying levels of spiciness. So get your takes ready, buddy, because we got a lot of them to pump out next week.
Oh, I'm ready. They're the hottest ones are burning holes in my pockets.
It's getting crazy up in here, man. It's just this is the final stretch. Like, so many reports, so many things are happening. People are second-guessing themselves, second-guessing... Yeah, you're second-guessing yourself. Me. I'm second-guessing myself. It's a beautiful time of the year. So if you enjoyed our player comps on this or that, be sure to find us on Twitter at @camp_dynasty and TikTok at @camp.dynasty, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Camp Dynasty. You can get in touch with us at all of those places. Let us know which comps you loved, and more importantly, which ones you hated, and why we are so stupid for thinking that a player could possibly be, how could you possibly say that Trey Benson would be DeMarco Murray? What the hell is wrong with you? But to that I say, I love Trey Benson, and I don't feel bad about it at all.
DeMarco Murray's not even good. He's a Cowboys O-line merchant.
Product of one of the greatest O-lines in the history of the NFL. I believe it. I don't care. Did he do something in Philly? Maybe. I'm not going to listen to it, though.
Chip Kelly.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. There's a reason he's coaching at UCLA.
And if you enjoyed the episode, be sure to like, rate, review, subscribe, follow, and share the pod feed, because we appreciate that as well.
Give us 5 stars on Spotify if you want. I don't know. Why not?
We got a few of those piling up.
If you listen this far, you don't hate it.
If you're in the, I only listen to the very end of podcasts that I really love. So if you're here, I appreciate you. Yeah,
by accident. If I can't find my phone.
Yeah. Damn it. Get this shit off. All right. Well, thanks for stopping by Camp Dynasty this week, and we'll see you next week.